asking questions is one of the simplest and most powerful ways of learning. And we're going to ask a simple question tonight. It's only got three words, and it's this: is Jesus God? Is Jesus God? You know, someone once came up to me and said, is it true that Yorkshiremen always answer a question with a question? So I said to him, who told you that? But questions are very powerful, aren't they? And children learn a lot by questions. And we can learn a lot by questions. And the Bible is a fantastic book of answers for the important questions of this life and the next. Now, many people today accept that Jesus of Nazareth lived about 2,000 years ago. And they accept that he was a carpenter by trade. And quite a lot of people accept that Jesus was a teacher. And he was a good teacher. And he taught us good things about how we should live our lives together in peace. And that what he said was wise and insightful. And perhaps a smaller group of people accept that Jesus was a very special person and that he uniquely may have personally actually lived up to the message that he taught. Some people, and we're narrowing down now, accept that Jesus was a messenger from God, that he was a prophet, and that he came to show us what God thought about us and to tell us what was lacking in ourselves. A few people, and I count myself amongst them, accept that Jesus was much more than just a special human being. That Jesus uniquely is God in the flesh. Eternity contracted to a span. And tonight we're going to look at a simple question. We're going to try and answer a simple question. Is Jesus God? It's one of the best questions to ask because knowing its answer must change your life. Now, Ben, have you got the next slide? So the first point, and the second, and the third, and the fourth. Come on, keep going, keep them rolling, keep them rolling, keep them rolling. It's 16. Right. Now, I'm not going to go through all these points tonight, but the first thing is, there is no shortage of evidence. There is no shortage of evidence that Jesus is God. He had a unique conception. He was sinless. He existed before his birth. He can forgive sins. He can cure diseases. He knows what people are thinking. He can control nature. He can create matter out of nothing. He accepts worship from men. He had power over death. He personally rose from the dead. He ascended bodily into heaven. He will raise all the dead of mankind when he comes again. Jesus sits on a throne in heaven. He is the judge of all mankind, and he gives eternal life. There is no shortage of evidence that Jesus is God. That's my first point. The second point, Ben, is, and again, there you are. Jesus cured diseases. If we look at the passage, we look at verse 14 and verse 36, we see that Jesus cured diseases. Now, what's the background to this passage? As Graham said, at the beginning of chapter 14, John the Baptist has just been put to death by Herod the Tetrarch. And this has a big impact upon Jesus. And he's going, it says in verse 14, verse 13, when Jesus heard it, that he departed from where he was by boat and he went to a deserted place by himself. So John the Baptist was Jesus' cousin. He's just been executed by a wicked tyrant. And Jesus goes off privately to a solitary area. He needed time there to pray. But the crowds won't let him escape so easily. And they followed Jesus the long way around on foot around the Lake of Galilee. Jesus is going across and they come round the long way. So instead of Jesus retiring alone for some time to contemplate the death of John the Baptist, we have actually, in the rest of this chapter, some of the most magnificent displays of the godhood of Jesus of Nazareth. And we see, and it's actually, if you read the Gospels at all, we repeatedly see accounts of Jesus healing the sick. Verse 14, a large crowd appear and Jesus heals their sicknesses. Now, this would have been people with all kinds of diseases, congenital diseases, blind from birth, crippled, maimed, mentally ill, all kinds. And Jesus simply heals them all. Over the page in Matthew 15, verse 30, we read again of Jesus healing great crowds of people. It says, great crowds came to him, bringing the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and laid them at his feet, and he healed them. And also in chapter 15, verses 21 to 28, we see that Jesus doesn't just cure physical illnesses, but he also cleanses a young girl of demon possession. So just look at this for a moment. We've got a large number of people healed. That's one thing, isn't it? To heal a large number of people. We've got some doctors in the congregation. And over the course of their careers, hopefully, they will heal a large number of people. And Jesus, secondly, he heals a wide range of complaints. Now, some doctors, they specialise, don't they? They're paediatricians. That's a foot doctor, isn't it? No? But they specialise in one area. But Jesus is healing a wide range of complaints. So that's the second thing. And the third thing is the manner in which he heals this large group of people, a wide range of complaints. At the end of this chapter, we've had it read to us, that people brought all the sick to him and begged him to let the sick just touch the edge of his cloak. And all who touched him were healed. We've got some powerful medicines nowadays, haven't we? You know, they say, this is a medical joke. So what doctors have we got here to answer it? What do you give to a man who's got everything? Broad spectrum antibiotics. You know, that's it's a question you can ask Bill Gates. What do you give to a man who's got everything on his birthday? But broad spectrum antibiotics. But Jesus actually cures, not with a powerful medicine, not with powerful equipment, but merely with a touch of his cloak. This is a unique individual. Who can work in the world like this? Who can heal so many of so many different issues in such a way? God alone. Jesus is God. And my third point is that Jesus has control over nature. We've got multiple accounts in the Bible of Jesus having control over the elements, wind, rain, water, etc. And here, he performs two stunning miracles between verses 24 and 31. First of all, Jesus himself walks on the water. Secondly, Jesus allows Peter to walk on the water too. Now, today, thousands of years later, men have walked in space. And men have walked on the moon. But still, men have never walked on water since this day, have they? And it's more than just an anti-gravity miracle, walking on water. We see in verse 24 that the disciples in their boat, they're buffeted by the wind on the water. So this isn't a mirror finished lake that Jesus is just trip-chopping across. This is a heaving sea. There's a strong wind. It's a rough ride for those in the boat. The water's heaving, shifting, roiling surface of water, and yet he walks on it. And the disciples looking out, rightly, they're terrified. They see it, and they're appalled. They think this must be an apparition coming across the water to get them. And it requires Jesus to call out, don't be afraid, to calm them down. But Peter still can't believe his eyes. Is this some sort of trick by some spirit of some kind? And he puts Jesus to the test. He said, if it is you, let me walk on the water too. I don't think I'd be brave or foolish enough to ask that for myself, but that's the kind of man Peter was. And Jesus says to Peter, come. And he allows Peter to also walk on this heaving, wind-blown water. Now in verse 30, Peter, the reality of the situation starts to get a grip on him. He realizes that he's in an untenable situation, isn't he? Humanly speaking, he's walking on the water and it's a difficult night on the sea. And he becomes afraid and he starts to sink so that he calls out to Jesus for help in verse 30. Lord, save me. And Jesus saves him. Now, back on the dry land, they get into the boat and they get back to the dry land. The disciples, having witnessed Jesus' control over nature, say in verse 33, truly, you are the Son of God. And it's a simple question to put to yourselves tonight. Do you see from this evidence that Jesus truly is the Son of God? Who can walk on water? Who can enable another person to walk on water? And even when that person starts floundering, be able to rescue them out of the water when you yourself are stood in the water? God alone can do this. Jesus truly is God, as displayed by his power and control over the forces of nature. And what happens, you know? And this is in sharp contrast to the Apostle Paul. Jesus always accepted worship. There's four clear examples in the Gospels where the disciples worship Jesus when he is present before him. Now, in this chapter, Jesus has just done three sets of amazing miracles, hasn't he? He's cured sick people, he's fed 5,000, and he's walked on water. And not surprisingly, the disciples recognize Jesus as the incarnate God and worship him, as it says in verse 33. And when they got into the boat, the winds ceased, then those who were with him in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. There's three other occasions in the Gospels that record Jesus being worshipped. Matthew 28:9, when the women worship the risen Lord. John 20:28, when doubting Thomas, having seen the evidence of Jesus' death and resurrection, worships him. And in Matthew 28, at the Great Commission, where a great group of 500 or more disciples worship him. Now, Jesus, you know, he knew it was wrong to worship anybody but God. And in Matthew chapter 4, which is 10 chapters back in this same gospel, Jesus, when he's confronted by Satan, where Satan's tempting him in the desert to bow down and worship Jesus, Jesus quotes Deuteronomy 6:13 at Satan, and he says, "You shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve." So Jesus knew it was wrong to worship anybody but God. And yet here, and in three other places, he allows the disciples to worship him. Why was that? Well, if you're not convinced that Jesus truly is God, let me say this. He was convinced that he truly is God. Otherwise, he would never have allowed men and women to bow down and worship him as God, since he knows that you shall worship the Lord your God and only serve him. Jesus accepted worship when he knew it was reserved only for God, because Jesus clearly believes that he is personally God in the flesh. Do you believe that too? Do you believe that too? So Jesus accepted worship from men. And my fourth point, Jesus can create matter out of nothing. And that's verses 13 to 21, where Jesus feeds the 5,000. And it's told very simply, isn't it? There's 5,000 men, and there's also women and children besides. And they're there listening to the ministry of Jesus, bringing the sick, etc. And they've no food. And Jesus asked the disciples to feed them. He says, "They do not need to go away. You give them something to eat." And this is after one of the disciples has said, "Let them go away quick and go somewhere to find food, because this is a deserted place. The hour is already late. Send them away into the villages and let them buy some food for themselves." And Jesus says to them, "They don't need to go away. You give them something to eat." Now, the disciples were put on the spot. They couldn't sort this issue out. And they said to him, "We've only got 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Bring them to me." And he commanded the multitudes to sit down on the grass. And he took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. Looking up to heaven, he blessed and broke them. And he gave it to the disciples. And the disciples gave it to the multitude. And they all ate and were filled. Now, Genesis 1 opens with the most amazing fact, doesn't it? Genesis 1:1, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth." God, the eternal, pre-existent God, made the universe out of nothing. The idea of the universe coming into existence at a finite point in time was shunned by many atheistic scientists for a very long time, because the creation of the universe strongly points to both an act of creation and therefore to the creator himself. scientists would much rather have the universe had existed forever and ever all by itself. But that's not the facts. The Bible in Genesis 1:1 has proclaimed the fact that the universe had a point, a beginning and a point of time, and it's only in the last 60 or 80 years that this fact has been accepted by mainstream science. As it says in Psalm 19:1, the heavens declare the glory of God, the skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech, night after night they reveal knowledge. But the universe is a created thing, and it had a moment of creation. And God's existence is greatly and clearly demonstrated by the created universe. We can see God's glory by his handiwork, that is everything that has been made. And you know, to create something out of nothing is truly work that only God can do. You want to try it? Do it. But all you've got to do is you've got to find your own materials with which to make the something from first, haven't you? And here, in this simple account, in the feeding of the 5,000, we see Jesus do exactly that. He makes something out of nothing. He feeds 5,000 men, plus women and children. That's probably about 10,000 individuals. And not only does he fill 10,000 stomachs with refreshing food, but there's 12 basketfuls of leftovers. And not since the creation of the universe has there been a miracle on this scale. I don't know if you know, but apart from the resurrection, Jesus feeding the 5,000 is the only miracle recorded in all four Gospels. So the Gospel writers themselves considered this to be a significant miracle. And indeed it is. It blows your socks off, doesn't it? It is truly staggering. Because of my background in physics, the first thing I thought was, how much energy did this take? That's the question that just sprung to my mind. What's the most famous equation in physics? E equals mc squared. E, energy, is mass times the velocity of light squared. Now, the velocity of light is a very big number, 3 times 10 to the 8 meters per second. So squaring it is a very big number. Now, if you think about it, we've got 10,000 people here. 10,000 people. Now, 250 grams of fish, how much is that? It's about 4 ounces, isn't it? No, it's about 8 ounces. About 8 ounces, 28 grams to an ounce. About 8 ounces of fish. That's about a nice portion, isn't it? And about the same amount of bread. So we've got 500 grams, 250 grams of bread, 250 grams of fish. So that's half a kilogram times 10,000 people. That's 5,000 kilograms of fish and bread. 5 tons of food to satisfy this multitude. Would it fit in this room? Right? But if you use E equals MC squared, and you've got M is 5,000 kilograms, and I'll let Graham check this, 3 times 10 to the 8 squared, it's about 10 times 10 to the 16. Anyhow, you work it out, and it's about 5 times 10 to the power 20 joules. And that's actually equal to the total world consumption of energy in 2012. The energy required to create that amount of food powers is equivalent to the amount of power that 7 billion people used in a full year a few years ago. Yeah. And Jesus is handling this amount of power safely in front of a crowd of men, women and children, and they're not all in hazmat suits, are they? Stunning when you think about it, but that's the way my mind thinks. Who can manipulate this much energy in his hands? God alone. God alone can manipulate the total power used by a planet in a year in his hands, in a moment in time. Jesus is God. It just cannot be done any other way. Now, over the page in Matthew 15, verses 29 to 31, we see Jesus healing all kinds of diseases and complaints again. And then in verse 32 to 39, he feeds another 4,000 people, plus additional women and children, from 7 loaves and a few fish. He can do this as often as he wishes. This is God. God created the universe when he wished by a spoken word. And here, 5 tons of good food are created when Jesus wishes. And a chapter later, probably 4 tons of food are created again for the 4,000. It's stunning what Jesus Christ has done. Now, Jesus himself said in John chapter 10, verse 34, even if you don't believe me, he said, believe the works, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I in the Father. In other words, if you find it hard to believe what Jesus says, then believe him because of the miracles that he does. Only God can do these things. He is truly God. Who can manipulate matter and energy in this way in his own hands? God alone. Jesus is truly God. And so, as we sum up, we see there's no shortage of evidence that Jesus is God. Even the most cursory glance through the 4 eyewitness gospel accounts of Jesus' life, it's stuffed through with evidence that Jesus is God. Right from the beginning of the gospels through to the end. And in this one chapter, we see that Jesus has cured diseases of all comers, a large group of diseases from all comers. He's had control over nature in that he's been able to walk upon the heaving water. We see that even though he knows it's a sin against God to accept worship from men, if you are not God yourself, he accepts worship. And we see that just like God in the beginning created the universe out of nothing, Jesus too can create matter out of nothing. Is Jesus God? Yes, Jesus is God. So how should we react? Well, first of all, like the disciples, we should worship him. They fell at his feet and worshipped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. We too should worship him. It's not about bringing sacrifices to him. No, what Jesus is after in us is not only a changed mind about him, but a changed heart. That's what Jesus is after from every man, woman and child. A changed mind and a changed heart. A changed opinion and a changed life. A heart that loves God and his laws and is willing to obey God. Do we worship Jesus? Do we truly see him? Do we see him as truly, equally and totally God? You know, all religions worship God. Only Christians worship Christ. Do your friends, relations, work colleagues know that about you? Not that you worship God, but that you worship Jesus Christ. Do they know who we worship and why? So what should our response be? Well, our response should absolutely be, shouldn't it, to the fact that Jesus is God, exactly what Peter said when he saw the wind and the waves as he walked on the water. We should shout out, Lord, save me. There's nobody else who can save you but Jesus, who is truly God. And it's our only logical response to the truth that Jesus is God that we should shout out to him, Lord, save me.